Hi, everybody. I'm Jim.
I'm Ryan.
And this is the Concept Crucible Podcast.
And today, we're talking about alcohol.
Ryan has not actually been drinking.
No, I'm not. If anything, I'm in the 3 o'clock lull, feeling tired. My brain's starting to slow down a little bit.
So, we want to talk about alcohol and alcohol culture and drinking and getting drunk and all kinds of things like that. First, icebreaker.
Yes.
So, what is your favorite beverage in terms of, like, the most delicious one?
Oh, the most delicious. Yeah. Blah, blah, blah. I think the one that I've went on the most about is actually, what's it called? It's the one at Booster Juice.
Booster Juice?
Mind over matcha is what it is. Matcha, vanilla, yogurt, blueberry, something else.
You just, like, listed off a bunch of things.
Oh, but you blend them together into a beverage.
Sure.
That's what Booster Juice is.
Yeah.
I didn't say it had to be alcoholic.
Yeah, no, that's true. That's true. Well, I mean,
suggested the topic.
Yeah. Well, mine is chocolate milkshakes.
Oh, fair.
So,
pre-mixed ones or ones that you mix yourself with the syrup?
No, like ones I would get at a restaurant, like with, like, yeah. Like that are heavy with, like, ice cream and stuff or whatever you put in chocolate milkshakes.
Oh, sorry, chocolate milkshakes. I stopped listening after chocolate milk.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, no, I totally huckled it. Which is actually a thing in my other circle of friends.
Oh, man.
Listen to part of it, and I think I know the rest.
I know, chocolate milkshakes are wonderful. They are my go-to. They're not worse for me than soda. They're not better for me than soda either, but they're a nice break from that kind of thing. And every time I get a milkshake at a restaurant, which is not very often, but I'm with people and I'm like, I would like a chocolate milkshake. Other people around me are like, oh yeah, milkshakes are an option. I would like milkshakes. What I'm saying is my milkshake brings lots of people to the yard.
Yes! I was waiting for it! Yes! I was hoping I wouldn't have to make that joke. Because the audience has already gone through, like, 3 iterations of it already.
But alcohol.
Alcohol.
So, Ryan, you're sort of a social drinker, and you work in a bar.
Yeah.
I do not drink at all. Mm-hmm. Like, not a drop. And I used to work in a bar a long time ago, and I've spent a lot of time in bars because I went to university. Mm-hmm. But can you describe, like, an early drinking experience?
I can tell you about the first time that I had my own beer.
Man, it's almost like we talked about this before.
Yeah. I don't have a specific age, but I was over at a friend's house in my teenage years.
Were you overage or under
I was,
the age?
I was under the age. Let's say okay. I was probably, I'll ballpark it around 16.
Mm-hmm.
I was a couple years away from the legal age, but not so young that it was, like, you would tell the story and call child services on my parents.
Kind sure. of deal.
So I was over at a friend's house, and my friend's mother called my parents to ask permission that if I could have a beer. Like, so she was a very responsible
That is
mom.
Very responsible,
so,
yeah.
So because she was going to let her son have a beer, she called my parents to ask if they would have it. And they're like, yeah, no problem. We trust you. You know, kind of deal.
Cool.
So my first beer, my first alcoholic drink, was a Molson Canadian in a bottle. That took
sort me... Sort of cold, I assume.
It started cold. It took me 2 hours to drink it. It was very warm afterwards. Very warm. It's you know, in retrospect, it's amazing that anybody starts drinking alcohol, because the first time I had beer, like, I thought it was disgusting. Like, other people would drink so readily, and I couldn't. For the longest time, I would pair, and this is because I love bananas so much, I would pair, like, drinking beer with a shot of, like, banana liqueur. That's how I, like, for the longest time, would drink alcohol. It would be beer, and then chase it with banana liqueur.
So the thing I don't understand, and everybody tells me this, is, like, when I first started, I didn't really like it. And I'm like, why did you keep doing it?
I don't know. It was the same with, I had a friend who really liked Guinness, and we were heading to Africa, and so I would, every time I would go to the bar, I would order Guinness. I didn't even like it at the time, but I would buy it and drink it until I liked it, because I knew that he liked it, and I wanted to share in the experience with him. So I did that. Anyways, back to my... I know, it's not... When you say it out loud, it doesn't make sense. but anyways, back to the story, because it gets funnier. So we're at the friend's house, and so I had one. I don't even remember how many my friend had. He couldn't have had much more than me. Like, he didn't become intoxicated. And then we were there with the mother's boyfriend and a friend of his, and they were drinking more. And then at, like, 3 o'clock in the morning, we all got the munchies, and... So they dumped out as much money out of their wallets as they could find, which was, I don't know, like 40 or 50 bucks, gave it to my buddy and I, and there was a Burger King that had just opened in town. It was still 24 hours. So they told us to go walk to Burger King and order as much food as we could get. So we get down there, 3-4 o'clock in the morning, look up at the menu, do the calculations, we go to the window or the counter, and, like, I mean, I'm tall, but we're two fat guys. At 3 o'clock in the morning.
I'm familiar with the feeling.
And we ask for 16 junior whoppers and 4 fries.
Nice.
And
nice.
She looks at me and she's like, what? She's like, 16 junior whoppers, yeah, and 4 fries. Figuring there was 4 of us. We would each get 4 cheap burgers and fries. And I ended up not being able to eat it all because it's 4 o'clock in the morning. But yeah, so... My first beer took me 2 hours to drink. It was Canadian. It was piss warm by the time I was done. And that was a prelude to walking to Burger King at 4 o'clock or 3 o'clock in the morning and getting 16 junior whoppers and 4 fries before finally passing out from exhaustion.
Nice.
That was my first drinking experience.
My first drinking experience, I did not drink anything.
I think you're hazy on the definition of a drinking experience.
No. Trust me, By the time I finish telling you, you'll be like, yes, that was a drinking experience. But yeah. I have never actually drank a beer or a shot. Like, I have tasted wine and beer and shots and things like that. But a single smell or taste is enough to make me go, no, I don't want that. That is not a thing that I want. But when I was 15... I was in drama, shockingly, and we won a bunch of awards for, we were in the Sears Drama Festival. And so naturally we had a party at somebody's house and we were all giant fucking nerds. So we only, I think, especially when you're like, you know, our ages ranged from like 15 to 17. And we didn't, like, we were having sort of a traditional party because that seemed like the thing to have. Like, because we were from all kinds of different social circles and all kinds of, like, the only thing we had in common, really, apart from a couple of us, was that we were in this play. And... So, we're like, we have music, playing, like, you know, whatever's on the radio. It's like Offspring, and because it's, you know, 1997. And, you know, there's some drinks, but and somebody got some soda from the store and some snacks. And somebody came up with the idea, and it might have been me. I don't remember whose idea it was that what we needed for this party was beer, because beer was a party thing. Now, none of us were of age. Mm-hmm. None of us had cars. So we cobbled together a bunch of money. We ordered B&D, which is the delivery service. But just so that we wouldn't, and I remember being deeply involved in the strategy of this, because the thing that interested me was solving this problem of how do we get beer without the delivery person noticing that they are delivering a case of beer to a house party of people who are underage. Because if they find out, they will just simply refuse your money and walk away for good reason. Mm-hmm. So We had a friend who lived down the street, and he was also in the play. So they were like, we'll get the beer delivered to his house. Because he only lives like four houses away. But we'll send, and it hit a baby face, and so did I. And so we sent somebody with him who actually looked of age. And we cobbled together all our money, $40 for a case of beer or whatever, plus the delivery, and send them off, away they go to get this beer delivery. And they encountered no difficulty at all. Like the bit of this that turns into like an 80s movie didn't. They had no difficulty. But it was like 9:30 when we came up with this genius ass plan. And at 10 o'clock, you know, people's parents started showing up to pick them up. And then now beer delivery takes a while. Mm-hmm. So by the time they got back with the case of beer, the party had evaporated. It was gone. It was just them and a case of beer. I think they wound up selling it to somebody's dad. for less than we paid for it. But they did get to keep the money. But yeah, because I was one of the people who would evaporated. Because I was like, yeah, if I want to ride home, I better get the hell out of here. I live far away. And so we all there was like nobody left when they got back. And we all saw them in school the next day. And they were like, what happened? You sons of bitches. That was like the earliest attempt at drinking, short of that one time when I was a kid and found like a can of soda on a counter, and I tried to drink it, only to realize about like just like 4 seconds too late I was drinking an ashtray. That was not a good night. But no, like I didn't grow up in a house of drinking.
Yeah.
Like my mom doesn't drink. You know, some of the men around me drank when I was a kid, but as I got into my teens, I wound up spending most of my the guy who was around most was a guy named Dennis, who I've written about on blogs actually, in the show notes. He was a really great guy, but one of the things with Dennis is Dennis was a recovered alcoholic. And he had a lot of friends who had recovered like years and years and years ago. Mm-hmm. But it meant that Dennis didn't drink. Mm-hmm. He would drink like orange soda or something every once in a while. And otherwise he pretty much just drank water or coffee. Mm-hmm. So I didn't grow up around people who drink. So it never became like a social thing for me. Mm-hmm. But that's an early drinking experience.
Yeah.
See, no, I told you.
It did fit the bill.
So, drinking, of course, leads to talk of drunkenness.
Yep.
We have both worked in bars. We've mm-hmm. both seen plenty of drunk people, and differently drunk people, I imagine. You get lonely drunks. You get needy drunks. You get angry drunks. You mm-hmm. get flirty drunks, mm-hmm. Who I would distinguish from needy drunks. Mm-hmm. There's all manner of drunk people, but the sort of theme tends to be a series of poor decisions, and then presumably a hangover.
Sometimes,
yeah.
Sometimes it depends. I mean, there's always the old wives' tales of beer before liquor, or liquor before beer, but ultimately it comes down to how dehydrated you get. Mm. Especially having just finished a biology course, and one of the final chapters was on kidney functions and whatnot. So, you know, just what happens when you pump in a lot of liquid into your body, what happens with diuretics. Mm-hmm. Alcohol goes to which section and knocks out which sections of the brain and stuff like that. So, I mean, the hangovers tend to be worse when you're severely dehydrated. Drinking experience, especially coming out of university and working at a bar. I mean, it would never be charitable to say that I was in any sense a party person. I am very much not a party person. I have consumed liberal amounts of alcohol before. But in the last few years, I realized it's becoming fewer and fewer far between. I like to think it's because I learned my lesson that you wake up and you have that, I am never doing this again because I never want to feel this way again. And I think at some point it finally stuck. I mean, the last time I remember drinking to the point of needing to vomit was, I don't want to say 2 years ago. I ruined Jay's and Renee's bathroom because I got blitzed on white wine. And Sarah, being the champ that she was the one who cleaned it up.
Jesus.
No, it was one of those things, it's so weird. Like, I got blitzed on white wine, just obliterated. We went to bed. We were staying over because we all decided to consume alcohol, so none of us could drive. So yeah. We stayed over at the friend's house, and I got up and I went to the washroom. Wasn't feeling well, and I wanted to splash some water on my face. I ended up throwing up, and I'm a sink puker because I think it's because I'm so tall. I just don't like getting all the way down to the ground for the toilet, and so I'm a sink puker. And in this particular case, I took a lot of splash damage. Actually, I should say the bathroom took a lot of splash damage. So I stumbled back into the bedroom in the dark looking for my glasses. And Sarah's like, what are you doing? And I'm like, I need to go clean up in the washroom. And so she ended up cleaning, and I just kind of stood there in my underwear.
What happened? Well, I exorcised all over the washroom.
Yeah.
And now it needs to clean up in aisle 3.
Yeah, and she chastised me, like, just use the toilet. Like, puking. But anyway, that was 3 years ago now.
That is the thing I don't. So the two things I don't get about being drunk, and are the things that everyone says, which is first off, they're like, yeah, you know, I get so drunk I throw up, and that's, you know, whatever. I don't want to do things that make me throw up. I don't like it. I don't throw up very often.
Yeah.
The last time was when I had food poisoning, and it was not what I would categorize as a good experience. Mm-hmm. So the notion that either drinking makes it a good experience or that people who drink think it's a good experience is weird to me.
I'll maybe explain that in a second. Make your second point.
Now, like, I understand that there are consequences to throwing up when you're drinking, like you sober up a bunch. Mm-hmm. Or that is what I have heard.
No, they're
wrong. Or you sort of feel a bit better.
You feel better because your body is not actively trying to expel poison out of you.
Yeah,
you don't sober up. You
but I assume that it must feel good because the other thing, the thing that people always do is they're like, man, like, I'm going to feel so bad in the morning. Or I had that morning where I feel so bad. And like that, the morning is the part that feels bad. Mm-hmm. The nighttime, like, therefore was good. Like, you're doing this sort of shitty cost-benefit analysis. You're like, no, morning bad, mm-hmm. nighttime good, which means the throwing up portion, which occurs during the nighttime, has to either count as a good thing or the good time has to be so good that it has to discount the bit where you just, like, straight up exorcisted something. Mm-hmm. Yes, exorcisted from the verb to exorcist, which is another way of saying to vomit in a projectile fashion.
Pea soup. I do want to address one thing in terms of the consuming alcohol, because I think sometimes, especially when I was on the first aid team, there was a fair number of people who were, if not teetotalers, definitely did not really consumed to the point of intoxication.
No kidding.
And so you sometimes, I'm not saying like everybody should be drunk so they know what the feeling is, but sometimes there's a little bit of a misunderstanding in terms of the intoxication side of it. Like, you know, people don't, so there, I imagine maybe there are some people who drink not like they might see vomiting as a badge of honor, or that is an
achievement. I have definitely met those people.
But as a person who's consumed alcohol to the point of vomiting either that night or the next morning, again, the next morning is more of a function of expelling, like basically expelling poison out of you, because that's what it is. Like intoxication is mild poisoning.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's what vomiting is your body trying to actively get rid of it out of your system so it doesn't have to process it. It's alcohol poisoning. I keep saying poison, but like it's alcohol poisoning is what I'm the phrasing I'm trying to get at. But anytime that I've consumed to the point of it, it's not that I was thinking I'm going to get drunk or I'm going to get sick or whatever. It's, you know, you get busy in the social situation because usually you're drinking around other people. It's kind of like, have you commented on the difference on your road trips between water and Perrier?
Yeah. Right?
So you commented that Perrier, you tend to nurse, right? Whereas water, you tend to consume quite quickly.
Yep.
I think it's the same thing with alcohol. When you knock out the ability to really pay attention to the passage of time, you really stop paying attention to your awareness of your body. You just, like, you have it in your hand, and all of a sudden, it's like, you know, like, maybe there's a mild thirst response or whatever, and so you drink. And you consume it a lot quicker. Now, I'm not saying that this applies to binge drinking behaviors, toxic masculinity and whatnot.
Yeah,
like we're encouraging other people to consume.
Yeah, but at least in your experience, that is one way, and that seems like a reasonable way of interpreting
it. It's like a runaway or downhill. Like you just it suddenly gets away from you, and you're not you lose the capacity to be aware of either your environment or yourself, and so like it's really easy to passively drink.
I would find that more compelling if I hadn't met lots of people who make the statement, and I think this is a very common statement. Oh man, I'm gonna feel so bad in the morning before starting any drinking. They're like, I am going to do a thing tonight that is going to make me feel really awful in the morning, and it's not training for a 5K. like here's a thing where and the other thing, of course, that goes along with drunkenness is poor decisions.
Yeah.
You know, and people joke about it all the time. We have a culture of sort of joking about the bad decisions you make
mm-hmm.
when you're drunk, or when you're drunk, bracketing, of course, the entire bit about rape culture, where some people are responsible for things when they're drunk and some people are not, apparently. Or women get blamed for things that happen to them when they are drunk.
Mm-hmm.
That is a conversation for an entirely different podcast that is likely not hosted by two white dudes.
Yeah. You
see,
as you point at your junk.
I'm pointing at the show notes, so because if I can find that podcast, I'm going to link to it.
So now you're just pointing at both our junks.
God damn it.
Remember when, like, things used to be over here?
Shut up. We don't do that anymore.
I know, YouTube changed.
But,
sorry, audio-only listeners. We have been doing a fair amount of pointing in space.
No, the notion that I mean, the reason why I've never had a desire to get drunk has less to do with my distaste for the taste of alcohol. I mean, that's a big part of it, is I don't like it. But I spend a lot of effort managing my behavior and like trying to be myself, trying to stay in character. Mm-hmm. And I have concerns about how alcohol or mind-altering substances will affect that. Maybe they will make it harder. That is bad. I don't like the person that I am when I am unmanaged in that kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
And from my experience, neither does anyone else. So, like, that amount of effort is worthwhile.
Mm-hmm.
Both for my sanity and for the sort of well-being of other people in my vicinity. And more like I guess the scarier bit is if it makes it easier. You know, people are like, well, you relax, you know, you stop. And I'm like, yeah, like if drinking helped me deal with things like anxiety and whatnot, that would almost be worse. Like I would worry about not stopping that, and that is also a large problem. So I opt to just leave that question unanswered, because if I knew, it would change the way I think about it. Mm. So I have no desire to find out. Mm. But, I mean, in addition to that, like, the additional impairment of making a bunch of bad decisions, you know, everything from deciding you can karate fight a telephone pole to awkward flirtation to whatever the hell beer pong is.
I saw an interesting update on the beer pong of putting the cups on top of a Roomba on a table so you have a moving target. Sometimes people who do bad things are very ingenious.
Why is your Roomba on a table?
Why not?
I think that's like, actually pretty funny. Like, and that's the thing is I am around a lot of drunk people. I mean, in social settings, I am around a lot of drunk people. At weddings, at cons, at parties. I understand that social drinking is a thing. I don't like really disagree with any notion of drinking. Although I noticed that as I've gotten older, the amount of drinking that goes on is usually like 3 beers, and then everybody's like, "Okay, I'm sleepy."
Yep. Yep.
Which is more fun? Is more fun for me, mm-hmm. because, what was the statement I made? I was talking with someone at a con, and they were drunk. It was like 2 a.m. We were talking about DJ software. And conversations with drunk people don't count in a sort of meaningful way. Like I will have conversations with all kinds of drunk people, but as a sober person, I have a lot more sort of spare processing to do. So it gets boring. Mm. But, I mean, drunk people, a lot of them will happily talk to you for quite a while, and I will sort of nod as long as they're not being shitty. Mm. But they don't count. Like, if I want to follow up with them or refer to something in it, which I often do because I will remember, mm-hmm. I will say something like, "I will email you about this when you are sober," because I am curious to talk about it more. And right now, you are drunk. Mm-hmm. Like it just whatever your side of this conversation kind of sort of doesn't matter. Because I'm the only one who's going to remember it. Yeah. Which I guess makes me inclined to cut drunk people a bit of slack. An occasionally necessary amount of slack, assuming that slack doesn't involve, like, endangering people's safety in any way. Mm-hmm. But it is weird. Like, I think part of it is also I don't want to have conversations that don't count.
Yeah, I made a little bit of a joke, but it's a decent maxim for me that, you know, a lot of times people find out that I'm a philosophy major, mm-hmm. Or they seem to find what I say interesting, and so they'll make the reference of like, "Oh, I want to sit down and have a beer with you," or "I want to get drunk with you and have a conversation." And I tend to have the rule that philosophy begins at the bottom of the first pint and ends at the bottom of the second, because I find that one drink will kind of loosen the mind a little bit, make it mm-hmm. more open and pliable. It'll make you stop ruminating on things that you're thinking about, you know, and let you focus in on the moment. And then after 2 drinks, things get sloppy. Thinking gets sloppy, and then it tends to get into really weird what ifs that are fun in terms of a conjectural thing, but not really material to any kind of discovery of truth sense. And it's kind of fun when we're sitting here talking about alcohol. Like, I miss undergrad and grad school, where, like, not the drunken antics side of it, but like when you'd sit in a bar for 3-4 hours and have really great, like, fun conversations. I do miss that feeling of fun conversations. Because usually when I have a couple of drinks, I do get, you know, tired, or I get bored. I become acutely aware that the time is passing by and I'm not enjoying myself. And sometimes, you know, I'll have to excuse myself and just, like, go home or whatever, because the conversation is veering into areas that I'm not particularly interested in. And I can't lose myself in it. I can't get absorbed in the conversation because, like, meh.
I feel like the the vicious irony in that is that you miss those conversations. Is that we started this podcast to record and publish those kinds of conversations.
Yeah.
In a non-bar setting.
It was a philosophy conversation without alcohol.
Yeah.
I mean, I think I had it on drinks, but
yeah, whatever.
You politely excused my poor thinking.
Well, that's the thing. I don't have any moral, like, it comes up a lot when you tell people you don't drink. People get really, it's like being a vegetarian. People get real curious about why. And I don't have any particular moral objections to drinking, or even drinking to excess. You know, do what you want. I am not particularly bothered by it. I am occasionally bored by it.
Mm-hmm.
And I have concerns about the sort of structural problems that surround it. Mm-hmm. But in a vacuum, drinking to excess seems fine. I have worked, spent a long enough working in bars to know that lots of people do it, and lots of people, those people turn out fine. Mm-hmm. I am not one of them.
No. And I'm not a particularly social drinker. I mean, I'll have it with a select few. People sometimes ask me why I don't go out drinking, and for me, it's largely, I don't like drinking with a lot of people around, and that's not in the sense of, like, I don't like being drunk around other people.
But, like, in drinking as performance art, like doing a one-man show on a stage with a bottle of whiskey?
Yeah, I don't particularly enjoy that either, but I think it's because I'm not good at that. No, but I prefer drinking at home. I enjoy being comfortable. I don't feel if I feel like I have to leave my apartment because I'm bored.
If I feel like I have to wear pants, then yeah, I'm really not into it.
But when you're out drinking with other people and stuff, there's the hazard. There's the hassle of, you know, like, if you want to get home, either you can't consume alcohol, even if you want to consume more, or you have to arrange for alternative transportation or walk or whatever. So, like, there's the hassle of leaving and going home, and you know, you're spending a lot of money, and you're not necessarily enjoying the environment or whatnot. But I prefer just being by myself, sitting at home, watching YouTube videos. I got drunk one time a couple months back, just this past year, because it was after I moved into my apartment. I got drunk and just sat and watched the Crash Course Literature series. That's how I spent my evening.
That is Ryan Huckle drunk. That's what that is.
I got drunk. I don't even remember what it was. If it was mixed drinks. I think it was mixed drinks. I think it was mixing myself white Cubans. Because I had the almond milk, and I had the Kahlua, and I had the rum. So I was making myself white Cubans with almond milk instead of milk. And I just got drunk and just sat there and watched Crash Course Literature. And that's how I spent my night. And it was incredibly fun to me and rewarding. I mean, I perhaps would not remember everything that was said about the books.
Like if there was a quiz?
Like if there was a quiz, I might not have done so well on it. I sat before the altar of the Green Brothers.
I feel like the Green Brothers would really appreciate it if you never said those words again.
Probably not. That's like how I drink it.
Amazing.
If I do drink socially, it's usually a smaller group of people, but it's often limited. But for me at home, you know, I might play video games. It's usually just YouTube because it's incredibly passive.
So if you were going to go drinking in Kitchener-Waterloo, which is in Ontario, Canada.
Yep.
Say during a podcast meetup or something like that, where would you recommend that isn't Chainsaw? Because Chainsaw holds a special place in both our hearts.
Yeah. Okay, so since you and I both came up with similar answers, I'll go with one in the hopes that you'll say the other one.
Okay.
I would say, because I'm a beer drinker, because I like a slightly quieter space, and I like variety of beer. I very much like craft beers, not in a snooty craft beer sense, but I like when they take different interesting flavors and make stuff. I like hibiscus beer or chai latte beer, like when they just experiment with the flavors. I would say the Bent Elbow.
Nice.
They have 8 or 9 taps, and it's the general rule is if you finish a tap, you get to choose the next keg. So it can be a lot of different things. Plus, they have an entire book of what they have on tap and in the cooler that you can choose from.
Hmm.
Kitchen, not so much. Their portions are kind of small, a little
nachos
slow.
Nachos are pretty good.
No, the nachos are good. Like I don't typically go there for the kitchen. I go there more for the beers, the flavors. So I would say, oh, and the location is kind of crap.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't drive and you don't live anywhere near there, then it can be a challenge. But
yeah.
I would say that is my favorite local place to go.
So, yeah, I went there on the way home from Con Bravo a couple of years ago. Mine, the bar of my heart lies now in the distant past, replaced by something else. I would have to go with Jane Bond. Jane Bond is a club up in Waterloo. They have an excellent kitchen. They have an excellent vegetarian selection. My understanding is that their beers are good. They're a little louder and a little sort of more crowded.
Mm-hmm.
But that can be a lot of fun. And the people who I find hang out there are sort of universally cool and fun to be with.
Mm-hmm.
Although it is usually sufficiently loud that I don't spend a lot of time there.
Yeah.
But the Jane Bond is a good time. If I had a second answer, which I realized I do, just literally right now.
That's the Huckle answer.
Yeah, this is the Huckle wrap-up right here. No, the Huckle wrap-up involves you, like, making burritos and then watching Crash Course Literature until you fall asleep in a burrito coma.
Season 3 is coming out, by the way. I just saw the trailer.
Well, I'm real excited for it now.
Season 3 of Literature is coming out.
So, no, we have a movie theater in town that serves drinks.
Holy Apollo!
Yes,
yeah.
They serve bottles and, you know, they have movie popcorn, which is delicious, and they play all kinds of fun movies.
I watched the election results there.
I'm sad that I missed their showing of Tank Girl.
Oh yeah,
because I never saw Tank Girl in the theater, but I did buy a membership, so I would have an incentive to sort of keep going.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't lose track of it. But yeah, I was like, the Apollo serves beer. That makes them a bar.
Mm-hmm.
That's wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And they are. They're wonderful. They're as a big guy, the seats are spacious.
Yeah.
And that is a good feeling. Like, I don't like that feeling in a regular theater where it's not even that I feel cramped. It's that I feel like I'm encroaching on the people who are next to me. And I think about that instead of thinking about the movie that I'm watching.
Yeah.
But I've seen a number of things there, and it's lovely and a good time. Post your favorite watering holes in the comments, so that if we are in your town, we know where we should go to get a drink, or in my case, not get a drink. If they have really good nachos, I'm super down for it, though.
Or karaoke bars.
Yes. CFR Karaoke Podcast, which will be in the show notes. Yeah. I'm Jim.
I'm Ryan.
And we're signing off.
Stay awesome. Stay thirsty, friends.
Last weekend was the 4th anniversary of Wutsu Riot.
Was it?
Yep.
Hmm.
I started Wutsu Riot 3 years ago. That was when the first video went out, which was Unconditional. Like the original Unconditional track.
Hmm.